From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Well, first of all, our condolences to fill-in host David Schrader on the passing of his mother today. David, if there's anything you need, we are here for you. Indeed. Well, today we unveiled the brand new coasttocoastam.com website. Wow, it was looking great. Until something happened. Something's down with the server. Maybe it's been hacked. We don't know. The IT department is working on it. If you're a Coast Insider and you want to listen to the show, use the app. That's functioning fine. And they're working on it, folks. I'm sorry. You're going to get a freeze on the homepage. They'll get it fixed soon enough. Later on tonight, a walk on the paranormal side. Hans Christian King back on Coast to Coast AM. Here's what's happening. This is amazing. This is in New Zealand, but it's going to happen here. The world's first pizza delivery by drone has taken place in New Zealand. Domino's sent its very first ever unmanned aircraft to successfully carry out a pizza order. It went to the customers Emma and Johnny Norman. They were the first to enjoy drone-delivered pizza. The pizza just showed up over their house, came hovering up, and then went down and delivered the pizza. I think that's weird. It's strange indeed. And who's out of a job? The pizza delivery kid. Donald Trump has resumed his war with the New York Times after a brief respite following last week's upset victory. He was going on Twitter, tearing the New York Times over claims that his transition team is in total disarray and foreign leaders are struggling to reach him. The president-elect made his case in trademark fashion, lefting a rip, a rapid-fire string of rebuttals in an early morning tweet storm. I don't know why he does this, but let's check in with Dr. John Curtis. John, first of all, the guy hasn't even taken office yet, and he's getting bombarded from all sides. But why is he battling these people? Why doesn't he just back off?
Well, because it's worked for him, George. You know, the entire campaign, he was battling three forces. And by far, the biggest of the forces was the American media. So they were all against him, with a possible exception with Fox News. But even Fox News, he had his detractors. Certainly Megyn Kelly is no fan of Donald Trump's. I think everybody can figure that one out now. But I think going after the New York Times, you know, this is the blow that to the media, I'm not going to call it a left-wing media, let's just call it the mainstream media, both broadcast and print, that the Trump campaign, for, you know, however you want to spin the result of this, how he pulled this off, it was a complete denunciation of the American media. The American media was selling Hillary Clinton, and the American voters, well, I mean, despite the fact that she won the popular vote, he won the electoral vote by a fairly wide margin, they lost their campaign against Trump. And Trump was battling his own party that was against him, and certainly the Democratic Party. But I think more than anything, the Trump's decision to tweet more of the distortions and the twisted propaganda that comes out of the media against him is doing, you know, it's getting through to the average voter out there that didn't buy the media narrative that he was temperamentally unfit for president, that he was a serial groper, that this man is a malignant narcissist. I mean, they came up with everything but the kitchen sink, and the voters didn't buy it. So I think he has to respond to these distorted reports that his transition team that you've been hearing about is an utter chaos. Now, what could be more preposterous about that? And that his chief strategist is some kind of white supremacist and alt-right person. How unprovable. I mean, how distorted is that?
Well, I'm just amazed, John, that this is all happening before he even has taken office. What's going to happen once he's president?
It's going to be a relentless barrage of the media against him. He is never going to have the media behind him. They are going to, it's going to be an attack like we've never seen for any president in history. And I think that, but, you know, it happened before, and it's simply a continuation.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll wise up when the press realizes they're either not going to get credentialed to have access to him.
That's an interesting take.
Or they'll go along and not be so relentless with him.
All right, track the work of Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Prosecutors have announced a Minnesota police officer has been charged with second-degree manslaughter in the July shooting death of Philandro Castile in a St. Paul, Minnesota suburb. The officer, 28 years old, shot the man during a July 6th traffic stop. His girlfriend was in the car with him, streamed the shooting on Facebook Live. She said that her boyfriend, Castile, has been reaching for his ID, and he was telling the police officer, hey, I do have a gun permit, and I do have a gun. And the officer, of course, did not really realize what he was reaching for and then shot him. Second-degree manslaughter charge against that police officer. In Baltimore, Baltimore City Council gave preliminary approval to a citywide ban on toy guns that look like working handguns and rifles. The council members introduced the legislation after a 14-year-old East Baltimore boy holding a BB gun was shot by a city police detective back in April. In Alabama, a 14-year-old boy who weighs just 55 pounds is fighting for his life in a hospital after years being locked away in the basement of his suburban Alabama home. Authorities said the teen in critical condition. Court records show that his adoptive parents have been charged with child abuse. Bob Dylan will not travel to Sweden to receive his Nobel Prize for Literature in person. The Swedish Academy, which awards the Nobel Prizes, said it had received a personal letter saying he was unable to attend next month's Nobel ceremony due to pre-existing commitments. He does get $850,000 for the award, but he's required to give a lecture between now in next June in order to pocket that award. You know, as I talked about a couple days ago, in sci-fi movies like Armageddon, if the Earth is threatened by an incoming and potentially planet-destroying asteroid, well, they would send a team of drillers up there, headed by Bruce Willis, and try to work on that space rock and save the planet. Well, NASA and FEMA have been conducting exercises on what could happen, specifically Los Angeles. Dawned on me, do they know something we don't? So I thought we'd bring in Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Stephen, is there something going on we should know about?
You know, George, it's interesting, and I've done some research on this, of course, for our listeners here, and I can't find out the end game of this. I'm trying to find out what were the results of this third, get a load of this, the third in the series, as you mentioned, NASA and FEMA conducting this emergency asteroid simulation. This one took place October the 25th. But here's what it's all to do. It's reaction to the collision course of an asteroid. And the specifics that I'm finding out are, they're looking at an asteroid which would give us a four-year window of opportunity. That seems pretty large, with a 2% chance of hitting the Earth. And the date that they selected in this hypothetical third simulation, September the 20th of 2020, the asteroid in question was to be the size of 300 to 800 feet in diameter, and probably hitting off the western coast of the United States, vis-a-vis the Los Angeles area. All I've come up and determined from this is that they're talking about, and it makes sense, the air burst of this alone, meaning that the disintegration, if most of it disintegrated in the atmosphere, is similar to that of a 50-megaton explosion like a nuclear weapon. And if it were to hit ground, it would make a 25-mile-wide area of utter devastation. So who knows? I mean, of all the asteroids we know, George, and you're asking me, and the listeners would want to know, the only asteroid that we really have any, you know, trackability on that had even a 2% chance is this Apophis asteroid, which again will pass the Earth on April the 13th of 2029, and again that same date on 2036. So we don't know, but we want to make sure everybody does their taxes before that.
Well, you know, it's great to be prepared, Stephen, but I'm just wondering if they're just not telling us everything.
You know, I always wonder about that myself, George, because then it's also stating in the article, as many people might have read, that they're trying to calm the population and talk to them about ways that they would handle this mass evacuation. Yeah, right. But George, finally, this is a guy that I never knew existed. His name is Lindley Johnson. And guess what his job is?
What's he do?
NASA's Planetary Defense Officer.
Oh, boy.
Wow, that's a responsible job, don't you think?
Let's get to him and find out what's going on.
Thanks, George. Always remember, always always remember to keep your eyes to the skies, and don't forget the Leonid meteor shower peaks early this morning in the east before sunrise. Moonlight may wipe out a little bit of it, if not most of it, but if you see one, that's all you need.
You got it. Thanks, Stephen. Always a pleasure having you in the program. Great insight. Great insight. In a moment, Dr. Peter Breggin joins us, our resident psychiatrist. We're going to talk about why people are so stressed these days. He's a noted author. One of his books, Medication Madness, what's happening there? Dr. Peter, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Peter Breggin with us, Harvard-trained psychiatrist. He's been called the conscience of psychiatry for many decades of successful efforts to reform the mental health field. He has testified, folks, before Congress about psychiatric drug-induced violence and suicide in the military, and he acts as a medical expert in criminal malpractice and product liability suits. Noted author, a couple of his books, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, and also Medication Madness. And he is back here for a couple hours on Coast to Coast. Peter, looking forward to Thanksgiving with you and your family, I hope, my friend.
Well, I am. I'm going to go on a little vacation tomorrow, George. It's the first one I've been on in several years.
Good for you. Where are you going?
I'm going to go visit my wife's mom, Jean, whom I love very much. And her family out in Indiana.
Okay, and you're going to be there for the holiday?
Well, I think we'll come back just before the holiday.
Right before.
Yeah.
Okay, Peter,
and
lots of things.
Have a happy Thanksgiving. I mean, I talked to you before then.
Yes, you will. Lots of things been going on, but I want to take a few moments to talk about people under stress, anxiety, what's going on with them these days. They seem to be more uptight than ever before. Just my guess, but what do you think?
Well, I think right now there is a lot of stress following the elections, and I think it reflects a genuine pulling apart of the country in two different directions. And I'm not exactly sure what to do about that. We can talk together, we can share different viewpoints, but your guest was talking earlier about the media and its attack on Trump and
yep.
Trump just standing up to the media. And I think it was necessary for Trump to do that if he was going to win. I think it's about time somebody who calls himself a Republican did that. Because there is this difference going on in the country where our educational system now, our churches, our schools, the media, movies out of Hollywood, it's all pushing in a direction toward this, away from America being a distinct, marvelous, and wonderful entity, from being a nation state, for being a place that has a set of values that is a shining light to the world. And there's another group of folks who just don't understand or feel that there's something very threatening about these basic American principles. We're really a land that gives opportunity to individuals. We're a land of personal responsibility. We're a land where people have come since before the inception of the country to find a way to live here, to have a chance to really survive and to grow. And that spirit of America is totally being undermined by the media, by our school system.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids in college now, they have very little knowledge about the roots of America. You can take an economics course here at the Cornell University. I mean, you can be an economics major at Cornell and never read Adam Smith, because he's the roots of capitalism. But you'll read Karl Marx. I didn't actually expect to get into all this, George. I hope this is okay.
You're good. You're very good.
Good. Well, I think there's a real issue going on here that just isn't resolvable by saying let's all get along. I think we need to begin making much more of an effort to see that our children learn that George Washington was a hero, that Ben Franklin was an abolitionist, that not all the founders were accepted or endorsed slavery, that George Washington freed his slaves on his wife's death after him, and and spent the entire fortune, the Washington fortune, on educating them and taking care of those who couldn't take care of themselves.
Yeah, sure
we
did.
Need to know more about the greatness of this country, and I think that's a huge amount of what's going on. Those kids who are rioting around the country right now, I think they frankly don't know a darn thing about what makes America a place that people have always wanted to come to.
Most of the protesters over the past week, unregistered and never voted.
Yeah.
What does that tell you right there?
Well, you know, they're the me generation, they're the entitled generation, and they're a generation that's been raised by professors who want them to walk out of school and even more, walk out of their own classes to protest. And I think we're just inevitably being pulled apart by two very diverse ideas. And one is much more traditional. In Europe now, the kinds of ideas that made America great are really dissipated. I had the most interesting communications from Europe and Russia.
What?
Which I think reflect very interestingly, and I'm not sure how. Maybe your thoughts would be interesting to me. First, I got communications from a brilliant researcher in Europe who was so stricken and frightened by Trump that he didn't know what to say. He's a dear friend. He's a marvelous, marvelous thinker and a brave man. And then I got filmed in my home by some people from Russia for a Russian TV program, and they said the Russians love Trump. Which
they
I
do.
Incidentally hadn't heard.
They do. Putin loves Trump, so they love Trump.
Well, there's a split going on in Europe that's pretty interesting.
Even some of the Chinese are saying we like Trump. So we're going to find out what happens. So if people are stressed, why don't we just prescribe drugs to them so they'll be happy again?
You know, we are in a catastrophic situation with psychiatric drugs right now. Let me just start out by defining what is a psychiatric drug.
Okay.
It's a neurotoxin. They're neurotoxins. If you read books that aren't written by psychiatrists, and I'm a psychiatrist, of course.
You are. You're a doctor who specializes.
I'm a medical doctor, Well, if you read neurotoxicology books, decent ones, they're going to describe the neurotoxicity of the antidepressants, the neurotoxicity of lithium, the neurotoxicity of these antipsychotic drugs, Seroquel and Abilify and Latuda and...
Why are there so many, Doc?
Well, it's nothing more than the pressure of the drug companies. The pharmaceutical industry, which I'm now calling in the pharmaceutical empire, it says it's invaded the country in a very similar way to which progressivism has invaded the country. And by the way, nobody was tighter with them than Hillary. Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
She held a White House conference when she was in there with her husband.
Yeah, she was close with the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, it was all pharmaceutical type guys. So the pharmaceutical industry now influences teachers. It's through the Department of Education. It's given seminars to teachers. Teachers learn as they're being trained about ADHD. And where law doesn't prevent them, they recommend most of the kids who end up on their first psychiatric drugs. It's the pharmaceutical industry there. The pharmaceutical industry controls medical education. All you can hear in medical school is pro-drug materials. The FDA now is financed directly under law by the pharmaceutical industry that pays for their drugs to be more expedited in approval. The result is that over 90% of drugs now just get approved. And
jeez,
the testing is meaningless. There's a drug that many kids are on right now, Adderall XR.
I hear that a lot.
It's a long-acting amphetamine. I won't ask you how long you think they tested it for, but how long do you think they should have? A year, 2 years?
A couple of years at least. Yeah.
Well, the control clinical trial for Adderall XR was 3 weeks.
Oh, God. Hold on, Peter. We're going to hit the break, but I want to come back and talk more about this. 80 million people taking psychiatric drugs, and that was back in 2011. By the way, Lex tells me the website is up and running, the brand new website. They may have underestimated how many people listen to this program, but they got it working now. And by the way, for you Coast Insiders, new login icon, upper right-hand corner next to your photo. And by the way, there's an article in the carousel that explains the navigation items that have moved around a little bit. You're going to love that website. It's working. We'll be back. Back with Dr. Peter Breggin, author of Medication Madness. And Peter, we were talking about why there are so many different kind of psychiatric drugs with the 80 million plus people who've been prescribed them. And that's got to be much higher now because those were 2011 statistics, weren't they?
Well, that's right, and they're also for the people who are on the drugs right now. What about the people who've been on them for a while and then off them? So your average person will have in their lifetime, I think, maybe half our adults are going to have an experience with psychiatric drugs. It's a bizarre number.
And not only a bizarre number, it's ridiculously high. My God.
Well, and it's very dangerous because psychiatric drugs cannot do anything that they're purported to do. They can't make you happier. They can't cure an illness. They're not dealing with illnesses like diabetes. They're dealing with the stresses of life, the stresses of childhood, family conflicts, unemployment, all the things of life. Life is hard. And so it's very easy then for drug companies to carve up pieces of life and sell you a drug for it, anxiety, for you being depressed, mm-hmm. having problems with other people and so on. It's really quite a disaster, and the disaster is both moral and it's physical. It's moral in that when you had like half your students at Cornell are probably on psychiatric drugs, you know, my office in Ithaca, I hear this. And in all around the country, large percentage of kids are coming into college on psych drugs. And what is that teaching them? It's teaching them that their brains are defective, they need a drug. It's teaching them they can't grow and develop with their own intelligence, taking responsibility, learning, training themselves, learning to handle their emotions. And it really makes people think they're at the mercy of their emotions. It's really quite amazing that people come in to therapy now or in for a psychiatric consult, and no one's ever said to them, well, you actually could learn to control your emotions. You don't have to collapse in helplessness in the face of a challenge. This is how you deal with it differently. We're really ruining people from a moral, psychological viewpoint. And then the long-term effects of the drugs, they all reduce quality of life over years. All neurotoxins, whether it's marijuana, drinking a lot of alcohol, or whether it's taking psychiatric drugs, which are in many cases much more damaging than marijuana and alcohol.
How do these drugs reportedly work, Peter?
Well, the lie, and it's really an outright lie, is that people have biochemical imbalances in their brains that are corrected by the drugs. Well, if that were true, of course, your psychiatrist would do a spinal tap or, you know, take a nip of your brain and study it or draw your blood. There are no known biochemical imbalances in the people who see doctors other than the ones that doctors put in automatically with a drug. If a drug company wants to find out what could be a new drug, they can't do it on the basis of there being anything wrong in the brains of people because we don't know of any such thing. So they actually give it to rats until they cause a biochemical imbalance. And then if it also causes abnormality in the animal's behavior, George, that's considered a potential drug. It's a poison. If it poisons the conduct of the animal, poisons the brain of the animal, now you can go out and claim that something like Prozac is correcting a biochemical imbalance when we know from the very earliest animal stage that all we know is that it's a neurotoxin that is putting the brain into an imbalance. In many ways, the real issue is, why do people want this? The drug companies want it because it is incredibly remunerative.
Oh, money, money, billions of dollars.
But why do people want it is, in a way, a puzzle, but I'll give you two quick...
Well, they think it's an easy fix, Peter.
Yes, that's a big one, George. They think it's an easy fix. After they take the drug, though, and I explain this in Medication Madness, after they take the drug impairs their ability to evaluate themselves. We don't expect somebody smoking dope at a party to actually tell great jokes or have profound insights, but he might act that way. We don't expect a drunk to actually be able to drive better, although he may think he can. And similarly, people on psychiatric drugs often think their lives are improved when they've actually become anesthetized. They don't care as much. I think the final effect of all psychoactive drugs, and in particular psychiatric drugs, is people stop caring so much about themselves, their own suffering, about life. It's an awful solution.
A placebo would be better, wouldn't it?
Oh, my God, yes. And the studies show that. The studies show that placebo is as effective as, say, the most famous of the drugs, antidepressants. We have really good studies on that now, that if you look at all the studies done for FDA approval, they're no better than placebo. But, boy, are they causing more horrible effects than the sugar pill.
So your medical doctor, you then decided to specialize in psychiatry. I'm sure in the early times of your career, you probably prescribed some of these drugs, didn't you?
Well, yes. I went into medical school to be a psychiatrist. I always knew and believed in human relationship as being what people need. That we need each other. We need services, help, love, attention, guidance. Sometimes therapy, religious inspiration. We need this from each other. I knew that. What I didn't know was how bad the drugs were until I began researching it. And I was floored to read these textbooks suggesting that a drug was going to fix a biochemical imbalance, admitting we hadn't proven it yet, and then looking into it and finding out it was nothing more than a PR slogan out of the PR departments of the drug companies. As it was, it shook me to my core to see the amount of hiding, and I was the single scientific expert for well over 100 Prozac suits. They selected me to review for all the different lawyers and all the different suits to review the science. When I looked inside Eli Lilly, I found out that they knew the drugs were increasing suicidal behavior in their little clinical trials.
Oh,
they already knew that. And they just never told anybody. So the pressure to just get these things out and make money is a disaster.
How do these drugs, Peter, supposedly work on the brain? What do they do?
Well, what they do is they disrupt biochemical imbalances. Prozac disrupts the famous...
Is that a serotonin issue, too?
Well, it corrects serotonin, supposedly, but it's actually poisoning the serotonin system. And serotonin system then fights back. It says this is a toxin, so it makes one change, another change, another change, trying to compensate for what the drug is doing. So then you not only have the toxin, the drug, now you have the brain distorting itself to fight back. So, for example, and it's important to warn your audience, if you stop any psychiatric drug abruptly, if you've been on it for months or years, you stop it abruptly, then what happens? Well, first, your brain has been exposed to a toxin, so it's got to recover. And second, your brain has changed, and now you go into withdrawal. The reason you get terrible emotional reactions coming off of most psychiatric drugs, because the brain has been changed so much that when the drug stops, you're left with your changed brain, and it's a very painful and terrible experience. So you can't just stop the drugs. It's dangerous to start them, and it's dangerous to stop them.
I'm in St. Louis right now, Peter, and, of course, Anheuser-Busch is based here, bought out several years ago by InBev. But nonetheless, a headquarters for AB, still in St. Louis. And I knew a lot of the people who used to work there. And every time they wanted to increase market share, they marketed and pushed their beers as much as they could, Budweiser, Michelob, Bud Light, and things like that. But whenever they wanted to increase market share, they came up with another beer, another brand. Is that the same with the pharmaceutical industry and these drugs?
Absolutely. Well, for one thing, their patents run out. So they have to change in order
uh-huh. to
these very high prices. And then they get the VA, I don't know who they pay off, but they get the VA to start giving these new drugs out when they're as bad as the old ones and have no advantage at all. They get the military to give them out. They get the foster home people in the states to give them out. The drug companies manage to get themselves into places where they only have to influence the top of the hierarchy. They did that with the schools by getting the Department of Education to do videos on ADHD. So it's, and that's all it is churning out one drug after another that are lookalikes, but they're all poisonous. There's no such thing as a psychiatric drug that isn't simply a poison, because we don't know of a single way to make the brain function better, other than a good night's sleep, mild exercise, and eat well. Basic things like that. We know of no way to tamper with the brain, whether our brain, George, comes from God or comes from evolution or comes from a combination of the two. It is so complex. Each of your listeners' brains more complicated than the whole universe. So we don't have a Newton of the brain, let alone an Einstein of the brain. We don't have the faintest idea how it produces thoughts and feelings. Giving a psychiatric drug is worse than putting a bull in a china shop.
If you looked at the brain, Peter, of someone who was quote-unquote normal, and then you looked at the brain of, let's say, a serial killer, would you see a distinct difference?
You would see nothing whatsoever different.
Really?
No. The only differences you see in that, it's all anything like that, the genetics, the brain, it's all made up. No, we don't have that understanding. But I'll give you the kind of gross understanding we do have. If you were to look at a series of people on death row, not a serial killer's, death row, which is usually a very impulsive murder often. Sometimes it's not.
Could be a murder and a robbery or something like that.
Very often these people are brain damaged. I'm talking about they've been beaten as children. They got injuries to their brain. They've been using so many drugs. They got injuries to their brain. But that's very gross.
And you can see that, right?
Yeah, can see that.
See that
and
in
that
scans.
Just means their impulse control has been harmed. And it's a very gross thing. Got nothing to do with the so-called mental illnesses like anxiety and depression or schizophrenia or something like that.
Alzheimer's disease. Clearly, there's something eating away at the brain, right?
Absolutely. And there's a big difference between something like Alzheimer's or the concussions that the football players
mm-hmm.
get. There's something that's a physical disease. You can actually see something wrong. And that's what we have always meant by diseases until the pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry got together. We always meant something that you could see or find that was biochemically wrong, and usually you could see changes in the cell or the tissue to call it a disease. I mean, as far as we know, getting depressed is nothing more than the reaction of a normal brain to unusual stresses. That's all it is. It's the normal brain. In fact, if you injure the brain, sometimes people can't get depressed anymore. That's why we do shock and lobotomy. You injure the brain enough, and you lose the higher potentials. Feeling anguish and despair, all of this is a part of the normal brain's function, dealing usually with the painful realities of social relationship, usually. It's usually about that it's hard to be a human, to love, to be loved, to face death, face losses, and also in our complex societies, economic reasons play in. And of course, various prejudices, racism, and so on, mistreatment of children and women, all things that are abusive play into people having anxiety and depression. And what people need is empowerment. They need help that will give them the sense that they can take as much control as possible of this life and do it well and do it honorably. Psychiatrists don't talk like that.
Peter, what is bipolar and what causes that?
Well, it's really interesting, George. When I was in my training, if you saw somebody who had a manic episode, which is the hallmark of bipolar disorder.
Up and down, right?
Well, it's not true. That only happens on psych drugs. We actually do have people going up and down on a daily basis now. The research is very clear. It's caused by usually antidepressants and stimulants.
All right.
They just drive people up and down. There are some people who get high. And I actually treat people in therapy that way. I've been doing it over the last few weeks. They get high, but in my experience, if it's not drug-induced, where the brain's been driven out of control, it's a response to being depressed. That when people get horribly depressed, it's so painful, it's so despairing, I totally understand this, that they run off unconsciously. They run off into, I'm wonderful, I'm great, I'm not lying in bed, I got super energy, I can be the greatest musician that ever lived, I can sell my house and double or triple it in a week on the stock market. This kind of wild excitement and euphoria, and
yep.
You can't sleep. And when you talk to that person, if they haven't gotten to the point where they're untalkable, which is possible, then they're really in trouble. But if you can still talk to the person, what you'll find is they're just horrified at giving up the mania because then they're going to get depressed. But at least when they're depressed, then they're more able to work on the issues.
All right. Now, without the drugs, what causes someone to have a day of euphoria and they're in a great mood and they're happy, and then the next day they may wake up melancholy? They're not as chipper and cheerful as they were the day before. What causes those swings?
Well, one of the wonderful things about being a therapist is you actually get to, you have this sacred trust and people talk to you about things. And you can almost always find something going on when the person gets happy that makes them happy, right? Everybody knows that. You're feeling better, your stomach's not hurting, you're looking forward to work, a friend's coming to visit. And when they get low, the same thing has happened, but it's negative. Only people don't know about looking for that. So one of the tasks when you're helping people gain control of life is to tell them, hey, I want you to remember when this extreme anxiety started. I want you to remember the minute beforehand, and I'm going to teach you how to work your way out of this. You're so depressed, you don't know why. Quite often, for example, young people who are away at school get depressed when they talk to a parent. This parent may not be very supportive of them. The parent may be lamenting their own life at home while the kid's away, quote, having fun. The parent may want them to do better. And there may be a history of child abuse that gets kicked off when the parent calls.
Yeah.
So there are events to look at, but they're not always easy to find. You know, they're not always easy. We're human beings. We're responding to real emotions that have some real basis in our lives. Very seldom are they just the result of a physical illness, but there could be a physical illness. I'm not talking about bipolar or mania or anxiety as an illness. I mean that if you get the flu, it can make you get depressed. You can't behave the way you want. I notoriously start to get depressed, and then, hey, look, I'm getting a cold.
You get depressed?
Every human being gets anxious, gets depressed, gets high. One of the things I like to remind people.
Hold on for a second, Peter. We're at the break. We'll come back. We're going to talk more about this. Dr. Peter Breggin with us. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, what's next? Your phone calls as well on Coast to Coast AM.